Wednesday, April 18, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant, independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. We have some breaking news to begin with today, which was brought to my attention by Brian Richman. His information will be in the show notes below. In a quick article he released today entitled, Congress Officially Requests Investigation into Clinton, Comey, Lynch, and McCabe, as well as Strozek and Lisa Page. It's a very interesting quick wrap-up that just kind of goes over the information, and he will be doing a show tonight, which I will be joining him on, and I'm going to quickly run down the information released in this memo, and I think it's a pretty big deal, ultimately, but it's important not to jump to conclusions or get your hopes up at this point, but it's a very, very interesting thing to see at this point, and it's something that I think is very, very important that I'm not seeing covered pretty much anywhere just yet. Now, it was a memo sent to Jeff Sessions, Christopher Wray, the FBI director, and John Huber, U.S. Attorney for the District of Utah, on behalf of 11 members of Congress, who were all Republican, which is an important note to make, calling attention to criminal acts and calling for investigation of and legal action against these six people. Number one, James Comey. Now, I'm going to quickly give you the kind of, you know, shortened, condensed version of what I got from this. I read the entire thing. I, as always, recommend you go through and read this entirely for yourself, because it's highly detailed and outlines the, you know, what they're being charged with, the codes and everything around it. I'm just going to give you the quick shortened version of what it's all about, and you guys go read it all for yourself and spread this around. First is James Comey, and it's in relation to Comey's mishandling of the Clinton investigation and decision to not charge her for plainly apparent crimes, even before interviewing 17 of the key witnesses, many of whom were her closest aides, and quote, questionable conduct vis-a-vis President Donald Trump, and him illegally leaking information and misleading Congress under oath. Number two, Hillary Clinton. The Fusion GPS research that led to the Steele dossier, hiding payments to Fusion GPS on mandatory disclosures to the FEC. And as these things are obviously important, and clearly she lied and manipulated and did the very things they're accusing everybody else of, I find it frustrating that there's not a lot of other things that should be on that list that are provable today in regard to Hillary Clinton, but it's a start. Maybe that's just what this is all about. Number three, Loretta Lynch. Her threats of reprisal to the former FBI informant who tried to come forward in 2016 with insight into the Uranium One deal. So there's a connection there to the Uranium One deal, which I find very interesting. But again, Loretta Lynch, there's a lot of different things that I think could have been included in this, but maybe the point is to make it concise and well-known information, things that they can charge them for, which makes sense. Number four, Andrew McCabe, his quote, lack of candor in the Clinton investigation and under oath on multiple occasions, end quote, and essentially leaking information to the media. Number five, Peter Strozek and Lisa Page under one, interference with the Clinton investigation and eliminating evidence of her use of personal email server, presenting false or unverified information at the FISA court. And then finally, a general reprisal for everyone who signed the Carter Page warrant, which contained the unverified and or false information. Now, I find all of this very interesting. It is seemingly selective, and I think it's important to note that this all aligns with a lot of the Republican side of the narrative we've been hearing. There's other things involved in a lot of this that are seemingly left out. But I can openly, again, it's always important that we see all of this outside of the two-party lie. I think that's very important, even if they have a one-sided intention with all of this, because all of the things they listed here are very clear, provable crimes. And I think that is very important. But it doesn't mean that there's not any Democrats that are doing many of the same things, right? But nonetheless, this is important. I think, we should see all of this kind of thing happening. But really, I think this is a good step in the right direction. I do think this is a very big deal. The simple fact that these people are being called out to Congress is calling these out and asking Sessions to basically carry out an investigation, it's a huge step in the right direction. I mean, I've been going on and on about the lack of accountability with these people, anybody in these elite positions and political elites, but who knows what's going to come of this. Now, like I said in the beginning, it's very important not to jump to conclusions or get our hopes up, because this could ultimately go nowhere. At this point, it's merely a request for an investigation, but it's still great to see this happen. No doubt, plenty of people in a very specific group are going to jump on this, claiming this is proof of everything they've been saying, when it doesn't really line up with a lot of what they've said, and it doesn't also include a lot of very important people they've been screaming about. But It doesn't mean it's not the case. I just wanted to point that out. Now, it's very important to get this information out there. I do think a lot of these people, primarily Hillary Clinton, somebody that I've been pointing out for a long time, should be held accountable for many, many verifiable crimes. And I think the important connection there of all of it, and it all kind of leads back to, is ultimately Clinton's investigation and their kind of, you know, collaborative effort to make sure she wasn't held accountable. That's a very big deal. And I really want to see this come to pass. Maybe she's being thrown under the bus. She deserves to be. We'll see what happens. But again, I stress the fact that this needs to be looked at from a nonpartisan perspective. Get away from the two-party manipulation here. These people are committed crimes and they should be held accountable. And again, to reiterate the point that there's plenty of Democrats that are also guilty of crimes, but this is a start. It really is. Now, again, this was brought to my attention by Brian Richman. I'll be joining him as well as Titus on Brian's channel tonight to discuss this development. So be sure and tune in, and I'll make sure and have all this information in the show notes. Now, to begin, first article of the day, it's coming from ZeroHedge.com, something I've touched on quite a bit and verifies claims I've made in the past. Autonomous drones will soon decide who to kill. The United States Army wants to develop a system that can be quickly integrated and deployed into its weaponized drone fleet to automatically detect, recognize, classify, identify, and target enemy combatants and vehicles using artificial intelligence. This is an impressive leap forward, whereas humans still operate current military drones. This technology could foster a new era of autonomous drones conducting operations in hybrid wars without human oversight. The project is called Automatic Target Recognition of Personnel and Vehicles from an Unmanned Aerial System Using Learning Algorithms, a very original name, which the details were recently released on the Small Business Technology Transfer website. In other words, the Department of Defense, via the Army, is requesting private and research institutions that have developed image targeting AI platforms to form partnerships with them for the eventual technology transfer. Once the technology transfer is complete, these drones will use machine learning algorithms, such as neural network blending with artificial intelligence, to create the ultimate militarization of AI. Currently, military drones have little onboard intelligence besides sending a downlink of high definition video to a military analyst who manually decides whom to kill. The sphere of warfare could soon expand to include technology companies, engineers, and scientists who would be labeled as valid military targets because of their involvement in building code for the machines. The article ends by asking a very sound question. If militarized AI machines are left to the decision-making of who dies, how many non-combatant deaths will count as acceptable to the Army as the AI drone technology is refined? Now, that's a very good question, because we always have this acceptable loss in this regard. And we see right now that they're completely okay with civilian casualties, just casual, blithely killing people because they claim they were shooting a certain target. I mean, that kind of just became okay after some point, even though people like us are screaming about how that's basically a war crime. But nobody seems to care. The numbers of civilian deaths have just skyrocketed since Trump was elected. And I'm not putting that on just Trump's shoulders. I honestly think it has to do with this kind of casual dismissal and just allowing military people on the field make unilateral decisions, which I've pointed out many times in the past is exactly what happened in Afghanistan. The MOAB was launched on Afghanistan, the largest non-nuclear bomb, and he wasn't even aware of it until after the fact. That's a mind-blowing concept to understand, that our president had no idea that it was happening. So a lot of these things happening today are due with that kind of release of authority to the people in the field, even people who aren't in the U.S. military, like Iraq military personnel in Iraq are able to call in drone strikes. I mean, this is real information here, and this is crazy. But to now see this go the way of AI, it's. I mean, the point of this, again, to kind of take a step back, is what I've been saying this whole time, even though they claim the opposite. It's something that basically that the idea of AI or kind of unilateral, independent of human interaction deaths are what I've warned about. And they've always claimed from the beginning, every time they talk about these new technologies, oh, well, don't worry, there's always going to be a measure of human interaction, which clearly this is not what they want. And that's what I've said from the beginning, specifically in one of my shows from February 11th of this year in regard to robot Humvees, where they claimed and guaranteed, oh, don't worry, this is always going to be humans involved in this interaction. But clearly that's not what they want. We even had an article discussing how basically the Pentagon was claiming the military will have more robots than humans by 2025. And again, they make the same claim that, oh, but don't worry, humans are always going to be involved in this process. But it continues to show us that they're working heavily toward the opposite of that. And that's just a very alarming prospect to realize that people will be killed without any kind of human decision-making process. I mean, you know, you could make the argument that that may be better. Maybe there'll be more, they'll be better able to decipher and, you know who's not a target. I mean, that's just completely hypothetical. The point though is that it will be emotionless. And that is a very alarming prospect at the end of the day. And I think this is something that we should be very leery of, and we should continue to talk about and not allow this kind of thing to go forward. Even though it seems like we're completely independent of the process in general, we need to continue to speak out about this. Moving on to the next story, coming from the freethoughtproject.com. Shock video shows cop kill unarmed man for complying with order to, quote, get hands out of pockets. Now, this is one that I guarantee you I'm not going to go the direction you may be thinking with this article. I am always one to call out misconduct and the rising police state in this country. I think it's very obvious we've been seeing this, where they're not held to the same standards. Basically, we've shown, you know, 3-4 different articles in the last month where they're not, the law doesn't apply to them, basically, because they're police officers. That's a simplified way to say it, but that's basically what it boils down to. But what we're seeing here in this video is a perfect example of how these things are manipulated to progress an agenda, be that the Black Lives Matter agenda, or even people who are anti-police, or, you know, whatever the narrative is. The point being that it's important that we always have an objective perspective, especially with these things. Even if I'm one arguing that the rising police state and police brutality and the way that they're not held to the same laws, I mean, I argue these things all the time. But nonetheless, in this instance, there was a guy in a garage of two children who were home alone, and he was not authorized to be there. Apparently, the story goes, he knocked on the door, kind of asked for a drink of water, and just kind of went in the house and then went in the garage. And then the police showed up, and the kid was like, yeah, there's some guy in the garage. I don't know who he is. And so they rush in there. So at this point, they don't know what he's got on him. He's there illegally. He's clearly, turns out he was clearly doing things illegal. He was robbing things or whatever. There's more backstory to it. But nonetheless, the point is he's there illegally. So at that point, they're on the offensive. I mean, they're making sure that this guy's not going to hurt somebody, right? Which is their job. I mean, again, I know how these things get abused. So I'm not trying to take one side or the other. I'm just basically looking at the facts. They walk into the garage, and it did happen very quickly. They say, get your hands out of your pockets. He had his hands down. And the claim they're making is that they say, get your hands out of your pockets, and then he does it, and they shoot him. It's not as simple as that. Basically, the guy had his hands down. He starts moving away from the cops, and then he raises only one arm and keeps his hand tucked. With right there, the police officer's thinking he's got a weapon. I mean, I understand that. And that there's a point there where you have to make a decision. And then he raised his arm in a really weird way that looked like he was pulling something out of his waistband. And look, coming from someone like me, that should mean a lot to you guys that I'm taking their side on this, because I'm very quick to call out misconduct on their side. But the point here is that it looked like he was drawing something out of his waistband, and they shot him for it. And in their credit, the other guy had his taser out, so he was ready to taser the kid if he didn't respond, but the other guy had his gun drawn. So at least in this regard, they were trying to do non-lethal action. But the point that the kid reacted the way he did was clearly, it drew out the problem. And that is something we have to focus on. So not only in this situation did he act ridiculous and basically try to walk away and then pull up his waistband, keep one hand down, it's just you're asking for trouble at this point. Now, I'm not saying that they're always in the right, but we cannot take every single video like this and herald it as some kind of obvious racist cop. You know, it gets absurd when we continue to make everything we can into something that progresses a certain agenda. We always have to be objective. We always have to stand back and look at the entire picture. As much as I point out the misconduct of police officers, there doesn't mean every single police officer is a horrible person. It doesn't mean every single person in any kind of official position is trying to manipulate you. I do think a lot of them are today. I think that's kind of been cultivated that way. But it does not mean every single person. And so this exact example, I think, is being manipulated and used to try to elicit some kind of emotional reaction. And we're seeing it in regard, they're comparing it to the one where the guy recently pulled something out of his pocket and he got shot. And, you know, again, I'm not trying to argue any other cases, but this one. In this specific case, it is being misrepresented. And that is something we have to keep our eyes open for. Moving into the next story, coming from ZeroHedge.com, CIA Director Pompeo secretly met with Kim Jong-un over Easter weekend. Now, these are reports coming from the U.S., and I haven't seen any other confirmations. I mean, I have no reflexive reason to think they're lying, but it's entirely possible because it seems like, in a way, they're secondarily saying, oh, well, we were part of this deal that's making peace now because Pompeo secretly met with him beforehand, which is entirely possible. But it still doesn't change all of their actions up until this point that have been effectively stopping every single direction towards peace to date. So I still don't think that even if he was involved in this meeting, I do not think that their efforts were trying to cultivate peace in any way, shape, or form. But it's interesting to see this happen because I think it's almost like the accusations they made about Russia manipulating evidence once they kind of knew that it was going to blow up in their face. They're trying to take steps to, claim this before it actually happens. And it may be possible, but that's my intuition in this. But it's also important. It's interesting to see here that apparently Trump is taking now credit for the quote success of the Olympics. And I think that is a huge indication that this is all kind of a lie, because we see very clearly that the effort in the Olympics was not to take peace or to cultivate peace. It was to stop it from happening. They made every possible effort to insult them and not take part in these things. And now they're taking claim for some kind of success that happened in the Olympics. I mean, that is a blatant attempt to manipulate the story after the fact and change the facts at hand. Again, very Orwellian. They're trying to manipulate the story after it's already happened to bend it to what they want it to look like. It's very interesting. They're quoted in saying, they've been very generous that without us and without me in particular, I guess, they wouldn't be discussing anything and the Olympics would have been a failure. That's coming from Donald Trump. I mean, it's just very interesting. You know, they're very, very narcissistic in that regard. It's all about me and what I did, even though that's absolutely not what happened. Trump also said, quote, as you know, North Korea participated in the Olympics and it was really quite an Olympics. It was quite a success. That would not have happened. Trump recently said that 5 different locations are being considered for the site of the North Korean-U.S. talks, which would be the first meeting between the North Korean leader and the U.S. president since modern North Korea was founded. As for the timing, Trump said the meeting with Kim would take place in early June or before that, assuming things go well. Though Trump cautioned, quote, it's possible things won't go well and we won't have the meetings and we'll just continue on with this very strong path we've taken. Which, again, I always point out is very interesting to see that claim, like basically saying, oh, we'll do all these things to make peace happen unless something happens, you know, and all of a sudden something happens. And usually it has to do with, you know, U.S. war drills being taken right on the border of North Korea, which then causes him to react, and they use that as an excuse to stop what they're doing. This worked like clockwork up until now. As always, I absolutely hope that doesn't happen. I hope we see these peace talks progress, and I hope the U.S. decides to participate. I just strongly don't think that's going to happen. All we have to base it on so far is their actions up until this point, and everything they've done has been to hinder any kind of peace between the two Koreas. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. Moving on to the next story, coming from theantimedia.com, average American taxpayer sent $3,456 to the Pentagon last year. As Americans rushed to pay their taxes on Tuesday before the official deadline, peace groups reminded the public of the uncomfortable fact that an astronomical amount of the money sent to the IRS each year goes not to funding education or single-payer healthcare systems the U.S. supposedly can't afford, but straight into the bloated coffers of the Pentagon. As the author writes, quote, as a result, arms industry executives make out like bandits while programs that provide essential services for Americans remain drastically underfunded, as do development and diplomacy programs that help end wars and prevent them in the first place. In an analysis published last month, National Priorities estimated that 23.8 cents of every dollar in taxes paid in 2017 went to the Pentagon and military spending. Meanwhile, 11 cents goes to military contractors, including 1.7 cents for the Pentagon's biggest contractor and maker of the F-35 fighter jet, Lockheed Martin. This is a point we touched on recently, the frustrating understanding that we spend so much money on military spending and funding other countries' militaries, while we can't even afford to buy pencils and books for the students that are already in this country. I mean, it blows the mind to realize that. And the funding idea is something that we've touched on quite a bit recently. But to know this, to know that our money that we're paying taxes every year goes directly to spending in the military, it should frustrate us, especially knowing that our infrastructure is falling apart, that we can't fund teachers and students and supplies, the very things that are important while we do everything else that funds the military. It's a gross misuse of our funds, and it should be very frustrating. I've seen a lot of people rising up recently, a lot of different articles covering people that are, you know, revolting and not paying their taxes because it goes to the military, which I wholeheartedly agree with, and I think that's a noble stance to take. But I don't advocate at this point because they have everything within their means to basically arrest you for doing so, which whether or not it's illegal, which I agree with, it still happens. And so it's a very dangerous step to take, but I applaud the effort and I think it's a good thing to do. But ultimately, we have to continue fighting this and raise awareness enough to see these things not be able to happen. But it's very frustrating to see this. And I think it's something we need to begin to raise awareness about, the fact that our money mostly goes to the military. And again, I always point out that we spend more than the next 8 countries combined on our military, despite them continually telling us that we need to spend more. That needs to stand out. Moving on to the final story of the day, coming from truthinmedia.com, BP claims oil spills are, quote, socially acceptable and boost local economies. British Petroleum, better known as BP, sought to convince the National Offshore Petroleum Safety and Environmental Management Authority of Australia that a potential oil spill off the country's coast would provide a, quote, welcome boost to local economies. BP made the claim in an environmental plan written to convince NOPSEMA to approve the company's bid to drill for oil in the Great Australian Bight, a pristine region along Australia's southern coast. As the author writes, BP has a troublesome record when it comes to oil spills, having been responsible for the 2010 Deepwater Horizon spill in the Gulf of Mexico, the largest marine oil spill in history. The disaster, which leaked 3 million barrels of crude oil into the surrounding environment, created numerous, quote, dead zones or marine areas devoid of oxygen and thus life, and also devastated local economies, some of which are still struggling to recover. It's horrendous to see this kind of statement made, knowing the kind of just absolute destruction this caused. And just like I said in yesterday's show about how Seattle spends over $1 billion a year in a feigned attempt to help the homeless, when in reality the money goes to corporations, medical groups, and insurance, which do to some degree help with immediate problems the homeless may have, but all while it would cost only $192 million a year to completely house and care for all the homeless population in King County. The point being, it's not about helping these people, it's about increasing the budget and scratching the back of those profiting from their destitution, usually because it helps their political careers to do so while pretending to be a humanitarian. We see these huge oil companies being continually reckless and not being held accountable because they are not incentivized to do so, even twisting their destruction of our environment and ecosystems as some sort of economic upturn for those involved. Think of the sociopathic mentality one must have to make such a claim. And at the end of the day, it benefits them either way. They run fast and loose to save money, and when they inevitably create an eco-disaster, they simply utilize either their own companies for the cleanup, literally profiting from their own mistake, as well as certain groups they work with, helping their own connections, all while the politicians are in their pockets and lining their own. And of course, the corporations are hit with a fine that is a mere fraction of the profits they make in that same time frame. This is the nature of our political climate in this country. Just as the conflicts we create in the Middle East are lining the pockets of munition manufacturers and foreign NGOs whose sole means of revenue is war, and the U.S. government itself as the world's leading arms dealer, literally selling bombs and weapons to countries fighting the wars it creates. This is the same in every aspect of American politics. And until we begin to acknowledge that, to take a stand for change, this deadly cycle will carry on. And at one point, maybe in the near future, there will be no turning back. For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or any of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.